After the corridor of humiliation, we move to the corridor of chaos. Chaos is an archetype, an independent force that exists within the universe. And it is a force we associate with God. One of the reasons why we fear divine intimacy is because we fear that it brings chaos into our lives. In fact, we're convinced of it. We are absolutely convinced that to say the word surrender is to give God permission to take over our lives, as if the divine needs our permission to do that in the first place. And it's so hilarious because we think that without the word surrender, we are actually holding off the force of heaven. Now, you see what I mean about arrogance? Nonetheless, we need that superstition. When do we engage chaos? Because we do. And we're very good at it. And we all have our methods, our styles, our talents. You create chaos at very specific moments, at certain times. When? I'll tell you when. You create chaos the moment truth comes too close to you. That is your trigger point. When truth or power comes too close to you, you will engage in chaos if you are unprepared or unwilling to hear that truth. Let me give you an example. Let's say you are an addict. And everyone knows it but you, because everyone else is paying the price for your addiction, as is true with a lot of family members who live with an addict. Finally, they have an intervention. They sit you down and every one of them says, "Your addiction is destroying us. You are an addict. You're an alcoholic, or you are a cocaine addict. That needle in your arm means something." But you don't want to hear that. "I'm just a social drinker. You don't know what you're talking about." And as it's getting closer to, you know what's coming, you cleverly turn the tables on them. There's an accusation coming. And you find a quick way to deflect the subject to something else. And pretty soon, you don't know how it happened, but you created an alternative chaos rather than let someone hit a bullseye where you finally have to say, "You're absolutely right. I'm an alcoholic." The whole dynamic of personal chaos. You have styles. You have methods. You absolutely have to own that. Because the way the divine works is that heaven uses chaos to reach you. Instead of running away from chaos, the journey in the soul is that you have to learn to understand the significance of what chaos means, the language of chaos, and its meaning in your life, and how the divine speaks through turning your life upside down, and why your life needs to be turned upside down, bottomed out, and when. In our culture, the whole idea of discomfort or having our life turned upside down strikes us as preposterous, as if that's not supposed to happen. How could that be? We take out insurance so that that doesn't happen. Insurance and lawsuits. Someone else is responsible. I will sue someone if my life becomes chaotic, by God. I will find someone to hold responsible if my life becomes chaotic. Because that is not supposed to happen. Oh, yeah? Well, not only will it will happen more than once and on an irregular basis. On quite an irregular basis, but you can count on it. Because you cannot order heaven. Such arrogance is not allowed. Rather than run from it, scream about it, and act like a child because you are uncomfortable and confused. Your job is to walk into it, directly into it, and learn from it. Learn from it. It is a system of guidance. It is the language of God. God spoke in a flood. God speaks in a fire. God speaks through the wind. Would it be any different in your life? Would it? No. Chaos is a way of coming through your life and wiping everything clear. Why? Because you are so afraid to listen to ordinary guidance because you're terrified it will humiliate you. So chaos is required. You are afraid to take the small guidance that says it's time to leave, go. But no, but what if something happens to me? Something is going to happen to you now. Are you going to go or not? Fine, you're not going to go? We'll fix you. And it will be a chaotic exit, but you will go. So it's not an option of will you go. It's an option of how will you go. You cannot avoid turning 47 if you're meant to turn 50. Now, you're going to do it screaming, or shall you enjoy the birthday? So, this is what chaos is about. You walk into it and not screw, my life's in chaos. Oh, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. Like all these people do. I'm taking a workshop because my life's in chaos and I'm just so unhappy. Stop it. You walk into it and say, I'm receiving a message. I'm going into a harbor. What sort of spiritual human being are you? This frightened little person. And you scream you want your highest potential? What is this about? I don't think so. You take this chaos and you think, I can handle this. You're talking to me. This is the dark night. Or, this is my brightest night. I will wait. I'm listening. Chaos means you're changing my life. Take it. What do you want? I'm here. You're taking things away that I didn't realize had to go. It may be excruciatingly painful. Change is excruciating. It's reorienting your compass. But why do you assume that at the end of the storm, it isn't the most exquisite sunrise you will ever see? Now let's enter the corridor of chaos. Close your eyes. Focus the breath of the soul. A deep breath. You are deep within your belly. Deep, deep in your belly. And you're walking down a corridor that keeps changing direction. Left and right, left and right. You are in the corridor of chaos. And on your right, there's a door that's completely circular. Open it up. Squeeze through. Pop into a room. Everything's flying on the walls. Left, right, up, down. What kind of room is this? You grab a chair, you bolt it to the floor. You sit on it. A letter flies down onto your lap. Finally, the flying objects stop. You take a deep breath and think, oh, what is this room? Oh, my soul, let us enter into a dialogue. I need to understand in this room what my methods are for creating chaos. I know I have several. Some are conscious, some are not. But I need to finally come to terms with the fact that every time I come near the truth, when I come near a truth that is too frightening, too intimidating, too overwhelming, I create chaos. Maybe I withdraw, maybe I start screaming, maybe I pretend that I don't know what someone's talking about. I'm not sure what your method is, but you need to be sure. And maybe you don't even know all your methods. And maybe your methods vary from one truth to another. And in this room of creating chaos and what your methods are, you need to look deeply because you have several and you love them. You've refined them. Some are subtle, passive-aggressive behavior, flirtation, manipulation, acting deliberately confused when you're really not, acting helpless, faking an illness. There are so many ways of creating chaos. Look to yourself as to your methods of creating chaos and which ones you simply are not willing to release. Under no circumstances, this one is not going to go. No way. This one's effective. I like it. And that's all there's to it. I will not let go of this one. Which ones would you release? Which ones won't you? This is a room you're going to return to when your life is in chaos. You're going to return to this room because your life is going to continue to be in chaos, in cycles of chaos, because that is life. Life is chaos. The sun and the moon, rain and sunshine. And when life moves into chaos, God is trying to reach you. Chaos is not bad. It is change. Buddha said life is change. You are not to fear it. You are to ride with it, walk with it. It will be painful. We will say goodbye to people we love because there is death in this world. And one day you will die and they will come to say goodbye to you. And people will be born into your life. That is change too. This is life. Be comfortable with life. It has wonder to it, and it has sorrow. And it has chaos, and chaos is guidance. And this is the room you come to. When you feel, I cannot think, I cannot, I just can't think this through, I cannot, and I must, and that's when you say, I need to enter my castle, I know just the room I must go to. This is the room. And in this room you say, Dear God, I know you're talking to me. You are talking to me through this chaos. And you be still and know that God is present. And you take your deep breath and you sit still and you say, I'm not going to fear this chaos. You see, I'm panicking. I am doing the wrong thing. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to enter this chaos. Be still and know that you are with me. I will not fear this chaos. Now, talk to me. Be still and know that you are with God. we're going to continue walking down the corridor of chaos. There are many, many ways that we create chaos in our lives and that we maintain it. Now I want you to imagine that you're walking down this corridor and that you walk through a door to your left. And this is a door where you open this, and this looks like a very academic room. It almost looks like an accountant's office. Here's a desk and a pad of paper, and you have to sit down and discuss something with your soul. There's a chair on the other side. And this is a room where you're going to go into every time you go into a prayer for guidance. This is the room I want you to go into. And to the left on the desk is a candle. I want you to light the candle. Because this is the room where you pray for guidance, but you must articulate on this pad of paper the chaos you fear and the guidance you know you're blocking out because it will create chaos. Say, God, help me with my relationship, but I do not want you to tell me to leave this relationship. This is the guidance I will not allow into my soul. This guidance is blocked. It's too chaotic. I am not prepared to hear this. Please help me with my job. However, this guidance would cause much too much chaos. Do not tell me to leave my job. It is not on the docket. What type of guidance would cause just too much chaos for you? So when you go into prayer, you know that this area of your life is off limits to God. You've already blocked it. You've already sent the message. Don't tamper with my family, my relationship. Don't tamper with it. So when I ask you for guidance, you can only go into these areas, but you cannot go into these. And that's just the way it is. This is a room where when you go into prayer, you are going to acknowledge the areas that are blocked with every prayer. This is a tough room, but you need to start acknowledging your blocks, because by acknowledging your blocks, you acknowledge how much you hear God all the time. All the time. This is a room of deep interior work with your soul, where you recognize, I'm finally admitting, dear Lord, that I hear you all the time. I simply don't want to listen. Amen. As you continue to walk down the corridor of chaos, you're walking out the back door, and you find yourself in the back of the courtyard. You're going to keep walking, and you wonder where you're going, and I'm going to lead you, and you down to the back of the castle, to a room you didn't know you have, and it's not really a room. There you see stairs going underground. And as you walk closer to it, you see that these stairs are very slippery, almost slimy. And you look and you see, my God, it's a dungeon. A dungeon in your soul. I want you to walk down these stairs, hold on to the railing. They're slippery, they're mossy, they're slimy. Walk down there. And as you walk down, it's getting colder and more chilly and damp. Walk down, hold on to a railing. You think, I don't want to walk down here, but down you go. And as you walk down there, you turn to the left and you feel this dungeonous, medieval, thick, cold feeling. you walk in and you see cells of people moaning. These are people in your life that you keep in cells. These are people that you hold in the tissue of your soul. The people you can't forgive. The people you feel bitter about. The people you wish harm. The people you hold on to because of hurt pride. Go visit them. Go ahead and visit them. Take the keys and jangle the keys in front of them. You have cells for temporary visitation and permanent. And you have some that you are threatening with thoughts of humiliation and how you would love to humiliate them. Go visit them. These are souls that you keep captured in your groin, in the groin of your soul in your body. Maybe it's your parents. Maybe it's an ex-partner, or friends, or an ex-spouse. But if you think that the inability to forgive is a painful relationship, a painful dynamic that is conducted in the mind, you are mistaken. The soul is a vessel that is designed to channel grace. It is an effort, a conscious effort to be unforgiving. It takes work, which is why you keep having to remind yourself of why you hurt. It's an effort. So you look at them and think about who you might want to release on this visitation. And while you're down there, you might want to pause and think, I wonder whose prison I'm in. It's not a beautiful thought. And what would it take for you to release these people? Perhaps you want to talk to some of them and say, I would release you if, or maybe. Now, I want you to turn around in the dungeon just for a few seconds. And right there in the corner is a little chapel. Very tiny, there's a candle lit. Go over there. And in your mind, kneel down for a second. And just say this prayer. Dear God, I pray for the grace to let go and to forgive. And until such time, please do not let my bitterness harm these people. Please absorb it. At least that much I can say. And now I want you to leave the dungeon and go into the courtyard. And take a deep breath in the courtyard as we prepare to go into one last corridor, which is the corridor of divine seduction. Teresa was clear to say that when you enter the castle, in this first mansion, it is difficult work. And yet God is so present there, but it's not in the hugely mystical experience. Don't expect mystical experiences, and yet the divine will seduce you, even in the beginning of this journey. How beautiful is that? Divine seduction comes in many, many forms. But the very idea of seduction begins with this whole notion that I have a passionate desire to be seduced by God, and I want you to think about that. To be seduced by God. For Teresa, Jesus was her beloved, her lover. That's how she talked about him. She was in mystical, orgasmic states with Jesus. The whole idea of divine seduction, literally mystical, orgasmic states. She would levitate. She wasn't on the ceiling, mind you, but she would hover. The whole idea of divine seduction is that it can come through you very, very painfully in that nothing on the outside satisfies you. You lose your appetite for the familiar cuisine. So where do you go? Let's go down this corridor of divine seduction. One of the most challenging notions we have with God is that God owes you. God owes you what? God owes you. That's all there's to it. That is simply the way it is. You're in the quarter of divine seduction. And you're going to walk down this corridor. It's a very slick corridor. It's very clean. You know the divine is here. It's very, very clean. It looks very monastic. There's a wooden door on your right. I want you to open it up to this very monastic room. Very beautiful. Very, very fragrant. You can smell the beautiful, beautiful fragrance of evergreens. And there is this lovely chair, a beautiful end table, a candle lit, and the letter waiting for you. Open the letter. Expectations of God need to be dealt with. Expectations. The whole idea of divine seduction. That you want to be seduced by God, but you want that seduction done fairly. You want the seduction done through stuff, through rewards, through good behavior, because if you're a good person, bad things won't happen to you. It's as simple as that. Isn't that the way things should work? If you're a good person, bad things shouldn't happen to you. Bad things should happen to bad people. That's just the way it is. Life would be so simple if it really worked that way, but it doesn't. And so part of what makes the journey into the soul so very challenging is that you don't trust deep in your system that the journey is going to be fair. What if bad things happen to you? What if they do? Because you know that in the past, bad things have happened to you that you just don't feel were fair. Just wasn't fair. Why did bad things happen to you that simply hurt and it's not fair and you didn't deserve them and so there? And this is the room of divine injustice where you finally get to just have your say. Where you finally get to just cleanse your soul of, I don't know why these things happened, and I finally have to deal with why I think everything should be just in my life. This is the room of who do you think you are? That the world of justice should be fair around you, but name an adversary and write a paragraph about why it should be fair around them and not around you. Could you give someone else the gift of fairness and release it from you? Could you forego the gift of having everything work out just fine for you so it could work out fine for someone else? Go into this room of looking at, God, why did bad things happen to me? I really need to know. Why do you need to know? Or can you surrender? Start with that. Because the goal in this room is to surrender the need to know why things happen as they do. And to see if, in fact, your capacity to surrender begins to build the generous heart toward divine intimacy. This is the goal of this room. And when you find yourself confused about, I don't know why this happened, I just don't know why I come to this room, and remind yourself, that's right, you don't know why. And you'll probably never know why. And that's totally okay. Surrender that. Amen. And now as we walk down, we walk into such a beautiful door. This door is so beautiful, you can hardly stand it. It is so gorgeous, filled with stained glass windows. Open it up. The light is shining. You think, what a beautiful room. Why haven't you ever been in this room before? Because you've never, ever taken the time to come into this room. It's an archive. It is a beautiful library. Every single book in this library is a luminous color. It's luminous. Every single book in this library is a portrait of somebody. They're not books. They're portraits, and they're luminous. This is your room of who is a gift in your life by divine design. Now, the top shelf is everyone you love easily. The bottom shelf is everyone you need to love, but can't. Now, when you find it difficult, when you are in just the most difficult situations with someone, you come in here and you pull their portrait out. You pull their portrait out. And you put it on the table and you light a candle. And you say, I need to love you. This is so difficult. And if you have to first stop in your corridor of humility and say, I need to be able to do some serious praying and I have to work through some pride first because this is really difficult. I'm not used to praying for people that I can't stand when I really want to smash them. You go there first. And then you come in here. Because the journey of the soul is not the journey of the ego. The journey of the soul is the journey to God. Transcendence, transcendence, rise above, stamina. Stamina is the capacity to pray beyond your hurt, to pray beyond your dislike. To pray beyond your pride. And this is a room to appreciate everyone who is a loving gift in your life. And there are so many. And when you're feeling lonely or abandoned, you come in here and even pull the portrait of people you've known for 5 minutes who've impressed you and you think, someone I've known for 5 minutes who made an impression. How exquisite that I knew someone for only 5 minutes who was sent into my life. How extraordinary is that? But reverse it and think, and I was sent into theirs. I was sent into their life for 5 minutes. It wasn't just theirs into mine. I want you to think about that. This is a room to appreciate your exquisite weave of you into all the souls in life. Divine seduction. You are loved and one among many, and many surrounding you. Amen. At the end of this corridor, is the most beautiful room of all. It is your sanctuary in the first mansion. It is your chapel, your sanctuary, the holiest of spaces. Open it up. It is a beautiful chapel in the shape of the four directions. The walls are white. The top ceiling is exposed to the sun. And the stained glass windows are beautiful, like the Chartres Cathedral. Here in the center is only one seat. And as you sit down, there is no letter. You are here to experience awe, to experience the sacred. You are here to be in silence with God. You are here to feel, to experience the depth of the voice, be still and know that I am God. You are here to receive the healing force of grace. You are here to be inside your own soul and to discover this deep place of receptivity. The healing chapel within your first mansion. Be still and know that you are with God. Receive the healing power of grace and feel it flow through you, through your body, through your soul. You are a channel for grace. You are someone called to be of mystical service in this world. You are a channel for grace. Be still and know that you are with God. Amen. Remember that the characteristic of the first mansion is that it is hard work. It is your halfway point between the outside world and the inside world. It is the mansion where you begin your withdrawal from the attraction the outside world has to seduce you. But remember something. Your journey into the castle is not about abandoning the outside world or your life there. It's about becoming empowered as you live there. And now as we move on to the next mansion, we're going to move more deeply into our interior. We discover the beginnings of the experience of quietude, soul companions, and moving closer into the divine. We'll leave the first mansion now with a beautiful exit prayer. So take a deep breath and follow these words. I am a channel for grace. As I leave my castle, grace surrounds me and grace protects me. I enter my life under the blessing of God and I remain open to receive guidance from my soul. I am a channel for grace.